6:30 and again at 11:45 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit.
Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Produced by Ave Maria Radio and broadcast through the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tamio.
How are you? Good to be with you. Are you ready for a very special edition of this program, Catholic Connection? So excited. Now, you heard Dr. Alan Hunt on with me a few weeks ago, and so intrigued by his story of converting to Catholicism, of course, being a pastor at a megachurch, evangelical church. How does that happen? Well, of course, we know by the grace of God. But I thought, let's bring Alan back, and let's get into the nitty-gritty, because I know, because many of you have told me this just from my experience being a Catholic revert, that there are so many of our family members and friends that have fallen away from the faith and have ventured into a megachurch or an evangelical church. Now, this is not to say anything negative about our evangelical brothers and sisters. That's not the point of this show. But this is about walking through Dr. Alan's conversion to Catholicism and what we can do better as Catholics to let Catholics realize what they have in the faith. Now, we're always thrilled when someone has a relationship with Christ. That is the bottom line. Okay, we know that. But if we believe, and we know it's true as Catholics, that the Church contains a fullness of truth, and especially the source and summit of the faith, the Eucharist, why would we want anyone to leave, or why would anyone want to leave? What do we do about this? What's the way to reach Catholics? Dr. Alan knows this because of his own personal experience, but also working directly with Matthew Kelly, who's an amazing Catholic evangelist, of course, and writer and speaker. And they have a great, great ministry, Dynamic Catholic. We'll talk about that as well. But I wanted to do this interview with Alan to just really just have a heart-to-heart conversation, because he had so many questions the last time he was on. And I wanted to bring it back on for a full hour. Now, we're pre-recording this show, just so you know. And you can find it online after it airs later today. And you can actually go into our archives at AveMariaRadio.net and maybe send the link to someone. As you know, I'm traveling right now. So when I travel, what I like to do is, in addition to having a guest host, Vanessa Denha Garmo is graciously volunteering to sit in for me behind the microphone, I also like to provide you, when I have a chance, special interviews. I don't like reruns. I know sometimes we have to do them if we're sick or something, but I really like fresh material. And so that's why I said, Alan, come back on. We'll just have at it, because it's a fascinating journey from evangelical Christianity into the Catholic Church, and I think we'll all benefit. How you doing? Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Teresa, it's great to be with you.
I'll tell you, I'm so interested in your story. Of course, I knew about your story before, but when we were on last time, there were so many questions, and we had a ton of phone calls, and we just couldn't get to all the questions. So let's start by talking about your own journey. How did you become a pastor of a megachurch? How did that happen, first of all?
Well, that's I was a Methodist pastor, and my uncle was a Methodist pastor, my grandfather was a Methodist pastor, my great-grandfather was a Methodist pastor, and my great-great-grandfather was a Methodist pastor. So if we go back roughly six generations, maybe even further, I grew up thoroughly saturated in the Methodist world. That was about all I knew. And I had been in the business world like you and was working in the management consulting firm when I first got out of college. And God just made it really, really clear to me that I was made to be an ordained ministry. I really had not ever considered that before. Had not been particularly active with the faith in a number of years, but got reconnected with the church in my mid-20s. And a year or two later, God made it clear to me that I was called to be a pastor. So I went to seminary in Atlanta at Emory University, which is a Methodist seminary, and then actually went up after that through the work of some of my professors at Emory. I got into the PhD program at Yale in New Testament and early Christian history, and thinking I was going to come back to Georgia and teach at a Methodist seminary here or elsewhere, But in that, God made it really clear to me as well, again, that I was called to preach, called to lead, and not called to be in an academic setting. So I finished the degree. I came back. I pastored at a little church in Rome, Georgia, the Vatican of the South, if you will, and was there for about 5 years. And at that point, our bishop, Methodists are structured very similar to the Catholic world, where the bishop actually has authority to move pastors. I had taken basically a vow of obedience to the bishop's leadership, and he asked me to come to a large congregation outside of Atlanta that a colleague of mine was ready to move on, and I moved there to Mount Pisgah in Alpharetta, Georgia, about 20 miles north of downtown Atlanta in the suburbs, mm-hmm. And pastored there for 8 years. And that was, I guess, when I got to Mount Pisgah, we had about 2,500 people in worship. And about 8 years later, we had about 5,000 people in worship. Wow. So it was a large church when I got there, and we used that to reach a lot of people and grow some more.
How often in your early years as a pastor did you run into fallen away Catholics?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I hadn't thought about that before, Teresa, because it really wasn't until I came to the suburbs of Atlanta and to a very, very large church that I did, because I was in two smaller areas of Georgia, Carrollton and Rome, which are smaller to medium-sized towns, and both in the heart of the Bible Belt. And in Georgia, the Catholic population is largely down by Savannah in the south and then in metro Atlanta. So it wasn't until I came really to the suburbs of Atlanta, where there's a lot of people who have moved here from all over the country and all over the world, that I really began to engage Catholics who had fallen away and had come into the evangelical world.
So what was your kind of attitude, your approach toward the Catholic Church at that point? I mean, what were you thinking in running into so many fallen away Catholics?
I guess I had two thoughts, because my first exposure really to Catholicism in any meaningful way was while I was at Yale. I really had almost no knowledge of Catholicism until I went up there and became very close friends with a Dominican friar. And it was through our friendship, and he's still my best friend to this day, it was through that friendship that we, my family and I, really got exposed and got the opportunity to discover wonderful parts of Catholicism. So I brought that back with me. And then when I came to suburban Atlanta, probably 40 to 50% of our congregation was ex-Catholics. And I have to tell you, at that point, I began to kind of try to figure out in my brain, now, why is that? Because we didn't offer communion in every worship service, but we had it after every service so that anybody who wanted to receive could then go down to one of the stations that was in the church after worship was over and receive communion. And I'd see all these people go forward, and they would all make the sign of the cross. And I was thinking to myself, boy, we've got a bunch of ex-Catholics, so this is really interesting. And I started to try to process through, why is that, and then what do we do with them? How do we help them? So I had this, on the one hand, I had this journey in my own soul that I didn't realize at the time God was kind of moving me toward Catholicism, and I had all these folks who had left Catholicism and were trying to make their way in the evangelical church. It was an interesting experience now looking back on it. I hadn't really thought about that before.
I'm wondering if they're receiving what you referred to as communion, even though obviously it wasn't the consecrated blood and body of Christ. But in their minds, I mean, in the heart of hearts, God love them, do you think they knew the difference? That's part of the problem, because if they knew, Rosalind Moss, an apologist, now sister, always says if they knew, they would never leave.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and frankly, that once I did know, I had to leave the evangelical world, because I knew that that's where my heart and my true home was, in the Catholic Church. That if Jesus lives in the Eucharist and in the Church, that's where God wants me to be. And so I knew I had to leave what I was doing, because I was so overwhelmed by the Eucharist. I don't know that I can speak for all those people, though. I mean, my inclination is a couple of things. One is, many of them were there because of divorce and remarriage. Where either they had, this was their second or third marriage, and they couldn't quite find their sea legs in the Catholic world anymore, and it was just easier to go down the street. And many of them, I think, obviously were not well catechized and didn't really understand what's taking place in the Eucharist. And so in the evangelical world, we made it very simple. Good music and strong teaching, and people could come in and kind of fit in very rapidly, and for them that was very easy. And then, oh gosh, I can get communion as well. This almost feels like Catholicism to me. And I think for them, it was just that was a part of it, but they weren't attached to the Eucharist in that deep fullness of Christ way.
Mm-hmm. But again, as you said, poorly catechized, because even if they were, let's say, divorced and remarried, there probably was, I would pretty much guarantee it from my experience in dealing with so many Catholics and having many friends who left over the marriage issue, they didn't understand annulment to begin with.
Oh, absolutely. Well, first of all, I would say they probably didn't understand marriage to begin with, but then they didn't understand annulment to begin with, and really didn't understand. And, I mean, again, it's easy, I think, for us to blame those folks. And we as the church also assume some of that blame.
Oh, yeah.
That we didn't do our job either. And they just, for whatever reason, either lots of pressure from friends and family, or maybe there was a bitterness and an unwillingness to understand what the church was trying to teach, but just looking for any opportunity to reconnect with the church, and they couldn't figure out how to do it as Catholics. And that's the tragedy of it.
All right, so you're seeing many Catholics in your church, and you're seeing them making the sign of the cross when they go up to receive the bread, not understanding really the difference between the Eucharist, obviously, because I don't think anyone would have any intention. I don't know too many people who left the faith who have really, most of the people left for that reason, either marriage or they just didn't feel like they connected, and they will say, and I think this is something we have to look at seriously, they will say, well, you know, I really didn't come to know Christ in the Catholic Church, which breaks my heart when I hear it. But
yeah.
I'm sure you've heard that before, too. So there's really not, I don't think, ill intent. They just haven't been exposed or has it been explained or something. At least that's what I found over the years for the most part. Very few people hate the Catholic Church who've left the Catholic Church. Have you found that, too, to be true? They just kind of drifted away.
Yeah, I do. I think it was more kind of they were in a boat and they were in the Atlantic and then just were kind of half asleep and the thing was drifting, and one day they woke up in the Pacific and they said, I'm in a different ocean. It wasn't, you're right, it wasn't like this conscious, I hate Catholicism, so I'm leaving. There were a few, I mean, there were certainly a few of those, but most of them were just like that. Either they married somebody who was a Baptist, and this was, and our church was kind of a nice halfway point between Catholicism and Baptist because there was some notion of sacrament, or it was just, like you said, a drift along the way. And you're right, the thing that broke my heart the most, that really puzzled me, was hearing time and again what you just said, where they would say, I never really got to know Jesus, I never really heard the gospel as a Catholic. And I remember thinking to myself, really? That sounds kind of strange to me, because I've been to Mass,
mm-hmm.
And my best friend's a priest, and he knows Jesus pretty well. And so I was trying to figure out what they were teaching me by saying that. And it was, and again, I'm still trying to process that one, because obviously, in the work that Matthew and I do at Dynamic Catholic, is trying to help people experience the gospel, and folks who are disengaged to find their way back into the church, to realize that we do not only have the fullness of Christ, but you do get this beautiful relationship with Jesus as a Catholic that you can't get anywhere else.
I think what they mean by that, and having and picking up on that, because I always challenge people when they say that. I say, wait a minute, you didn't hear the gospel. What is the what happens in Mass? We have the liturgy of the Word, liturgy of the Eucharist. What do you think the first half of the Mass is? It's all of Scripture. It's Old Testament. It's the responsorial psalm. It's the New Testament. It's the gospel message. And then they kind of say, well, what I mean by that is never heard someone talking about a personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and it's funny because when I came into the church, the priest down the street from me, he was just a marvelous man in his early 70s, and Senior Paul Reynolds, and he's no longer with us. He died a couple of years after that,
mm-hmm.
And he was extremely gracious to me, and he invited me to come have lunch with him. He had come here from Ireland, and he said, Alan, whenever I drive by your old church, I think to myself, what do they know about giving that we don't know?
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to come talk to me about giving. So I went to see him the first time and sat in his office, and he said, before we talk about giving, I want to tell you about a conversation I had with somebody that came into my office the other day and said, Father, I really want a personal relationship with Jesus, and I can't figure out how to do it as a Catholic, and so I'm leaving the church to go to this other church. And Monsignor Reynolds said, first of all, it broke my heart, and second of all, I asked him, what do you think we're doing in the Eucharist when we receive the body and blood of Jesus? Does that not convey to you that you have a personal relationship with Jesus? And he was just crestfallen to think that people somehow were missing that intimate, wonderful moment in the Eucharist and not seeing that as the deepest, lovingest, if that's a word, expression of that personal relationship with Jesus. So there's a gap somewhere, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's take a break. We're chatting with Dr. Alan Hunt, and you may have seen him with his testimony on The Journey Home. Of course, you're probably familiar with his work. He serves alongside Matthew Kelly as a VP of Strategy and Content at the Dynamic Catholic Institute. Nationally known speaker and best-selling author, his books include Confessions of a Megachurch Pastor, How I Discovered the Hidden Treasures of the Catholic Church, Everybody Needs to Forgive Somebody, which is his latest one, in 9 words, a Bible study to help you become the best version of yourself. DynamicCatholic.com for more information about Dr. Alan and the work that he and Matthew do there. We'll be right back to talk more about his journey from being a megapastor into working in and being a convert to Catholicism in the Catholic Church. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta, and on Cresta in the Afternoon, we weekly interview guests who are expert in church doctrine, or religious liberty, protecting the unborn, Vatican diplomacy, edifying movies, and much, much more. And we want to make those interviews easier to share with your family and friends. So we're looking for volunteers to transcribe these interviews into text form. They're going to be circulated nationally. And if you're interested in helping, email Nick at ntom, T-H-O-M-M, at WDEO.net.
Now, in the Ave Maria online store, 2 brilliant talks on Advent by Father John Ricardo. In the mystery of Advent, Father John dives into Scripture to regain the wonder we should experience during this season. In Advent Confession, Father John helps us prepare for the Nativity of the Lord through the story of the prodigal son. Order both talks now by going to AveMariaRadio.net and clicking on Advent Talks under the store tab. It's a great gift that will help you and your loved ones enter into the mystery and mercy of Advent.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life.
As our nation approaches the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, the premier prayer event marking this occasion will occur in Washington, D.C. on Friday, January 27th. Organized by Priests for Life and several other leading groups, this service will feature top leaders of many Christian denominations. It will occur in DAR Constitution Hall from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. Mass will be held at 7:30. Admission is free and large groups are welcome. Pam Tebow will be the honored guest and speaker. I will deliver the sermon. Let's have a massive turnout that will send a message to the nation. It's time to turn to God to end child killing in America. Visit nationalprayerservice.com for details.
This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
Past the hour. We'll be having a blessed day. Special show this morning. Full hour with Dr. Alan Hunt, convert to Catholicism. He was a megachurch pastor in the evangelical world, a background in the Methodist Church. And so, Alan, it sounds like you had some pretty good relationships with Catholics who were active. You mentioned having one of your friends who was a really good priest. So when did you start looking at Catholicism? Was it to help the people in your church, in your congregation, the former Catholics?
No, I wish I could say I was that noble. It was really more to help my own soul. When I came back from Connecticut, and we had had a really intense time of suffering as a family when we were there, and Father Stephen had been with us through all that. I had ulcerative colitis and melanoma, and my wife had 2 miscarriages, and we had 2 little girls all in the span of a few years there. And it was a very difficult time. And I came back, Father Stephen kind of melded to our family through that period of suffering. So I came back to Georgia, and I was pastoring. And as a guy that had to get up and preach every week, I really was trying to take seriously making sure that I was feeding my own soul so that I had something to offer the people. And so I wish I could say that I kind of figured this out, Teresa, but I didn't. I started to do very Catholic things because of the habits I developed when I was near Father Stephen in Connecticut. So I started to go to the Cistercian Monastery, which is about 30 minutes outside of Atlanta, one day a month for a day of prayer and retreat, just to take time away from my pastoral leadership to go reflect and get spiritual direction from the abbot there. He was very gracious to me and would meet with me and talk with me. And so I began to do different things like that that God used to slowly but surely bring to fruition. And then I did, I guess, when I became the pastor here in Atlanta, really began to populate my sermons with saints and different kinds of things, so much so that when I came into the church, some of my former Catholic members at my old congregation said, yeah, I could kind of see this coming, because you would always, you'd mention St. Thomas here and St. Francis here and talk about Mother Teresa there. So I think there was more going on than I was even aware of in my own soul as God was doing his work.
So when you were quoting these saints and preparing your sermons, what was going through your mind about the Catholic Church? Or was it just more, wow, this is great material, this saint really has a lot to say? Or did you think, well, if these folks are Catholic, maybe there's something to this thing, Catholicism?
Yeah, I wish I'm not as smart as you, Teresa. I was looking for good material and good Christian content, and I didn't. And so I did a whole sermon on Brother Lawrence and humble service and practicing the presence of God, and didn't really reflect on the theological differences between my congregation and me and the Catholic world. It was, here's another, to me, it was all sort of part of one big garment. And then eventually I began to realize there's a whole, and I think where the click came in my brain was eventually, after reflecting on this long enough, I began to realize there's a whole category of holiness in the Catholic Church that is totally missing from my life in the Protestant world. Having met some cloistered nuns and spent a lot of time with them, nothing like that exists in the Protestant world. Having read about Brother Lawrence and really diving into his life and sharing some of that, there's nothing that exists like that in the Protestant world. I began to think, okay, now why are all these examples of really, really, really devoted holiness Catholic? And so eventually that began to percolate in my brain, because I knew that you and I are created to give ourselves over to God. And if the folks who are doing that the most deeply are Catholic, maybe I need to begin to take a step back and think about why that is.
Isn't it interesting, though, because when I started to come back to the church, and you know my story because you read it in my new book that I sent you, and it was so interesting for me because I felt half thrilled and half angry, and my husband felt the same way, because even though I fell in love with the Eucharist as a child, I wouldn't say that beyond grade school there was too much more for me back then as a Catholic growing up in the 70s, and I was looking at all of this and thinking, wow, I could have had a V8. Where the heck have I been all these years? And it's so deep. And even this day, I'm serious. I feel like I wish I didn't have to sleep. I could be reading something because it's so incredibly deep and rich. And you know what? Everything makes sense.
Yeah, and I think that's I'm so into. By the way, I did finish God's bucket list. Matthew and I both read that last week. Great book.
Thank you.
It's coming out in November.
Mm-hmm. November 5th.
Well done. So it'd be a perfect Christmas gift.
Yes.
But I think what you said is exactly what happened to me is that I just began to reflect on all that and realized, wow, I feel like I've exhausted the resources of not only Methodism but also Protestantism, and it, the resources and the treasures. I mean, that's what my first book was about, the hidden treasures of Catholicism. I never knew anything about. I think a lot of cradle Catholics either don't know or have forgotten or are lying dormant about these treasures that are inexhaustible. I mean, you and I could never possibly exhaust the spiritual resources and treasures of the Catholic Church. And I at some point, my soul really began to crave and my heart began to yearn to be as close to God as possible. And I knew that in order for that to happen, I had to become Catholic. And that's when the rubber hits the road. I mean, you had that decision where you're half angry, half excited. I was half excited and half terrified. Terrified is such a mild word, maybe mortified. Okay, you know, what's my life going to look like on the other side of this? But I don't have any choice. If I really want to follow God and be as close to him as I can in this life in preparation for the next, I don't have any choice.
Now, how did this, in terms of how long of a process was it, Alan, from where you were in terms of seriously making the decision to convert, and then did you have to go through RCIA or no? I would imagine with your background you probably didn't have to go through the full, or did you?
I was pretty lucky because one of the larger parishes in the Atlanta diocese was about 200 yards down the street from the megachurch that I was the pastor of, so I knew the priest there. And he had recently become the vicar general. And so I called him up, and I hadn't talked to him in, I don't know, 6 months or a year and since he'd become the vicar general, and I said, hey, can we have lunch? And he didn't call me back for like a day. And so I called him back again and left to a voicemail and said, can we have lunch because I'm really thinking about swimming the diver?
Hmm.
He called me back in about 15 minutes. And said, really? I said, yeah, let's meet someplace where nobody knows us. And so we met, and he goes, I'll set up a time for you to come meet with the Archbishop, and we can kind of talk through how we're going to do this. And ultimately, the Archbishop said, let me assign you informally to a priest who has more experience with Protestants than most of our priests do, and you meet with him, and whenever the two of you are in agreement that you're ready, then we'll just do it.
Mm-hmm.
So he assigned me to a marvelous priest in downtown Atlanta, and I went down and met with him. I can't remember now, 6, 8, maybe 10 times. Just had a good conversation and kind of worked our way through to both of our satisfactions, and came into the church on the Feast of the Epiphany on my 44th birthday, January 6, 2008.
Wow, incredible. We're talking with Dr. Alan Hunt. Of course, you'll probably know him well. You've probably heard about his story already. He works alongside Matthew Kelly as VP of Strategy and Content at the Dynamic Catholic Institute, a convert to Catholicism. More on this conversation and on what we can do to help Catholics stay Catholic when we come back. This is what they do with Dynamic Catholic. The website is dynamiccatholic.com. Dr. Alan Hunt, we continue our conversation on this special edition of Catholic Connection. We'll be right back.
Catholic Connection is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds offer equity and fixed income mutual funds that can combat today's low interest rates that harm many long-term investment plans. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Their portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. To learn more, the number is toll-free, 1-866-AVE-MARIA, or visit AveMariaFunds.com. This Ave Maria radio program is underwritten in part by Visiting Angels. Many people are wondering how they can care for older family members who cannot fully care for themselves. Visiting Angels provides compassionate home visits even up to 24 hours per day, and you may select your caregiver. Visiting Angels assist adults nationwide to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide help in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Visiting Angels is online at visitingangels.com. Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care.
When we ask our Father to give us this day our daily bread, are we merely asking for daily nourishment? We are, says the Catholic Catechism, indeed asking the Father who gives us life for the material and spiritual nourishment which life requires. But we are asking for much more. Those who seek the kingdom of God and its righteousness, God has promised to give all else besides. Since everything belongs to God, he who possesses God possesses everything, if he himself is not found wanting before God. The drama of hunger in the world, therefore, calls upon all Christians to exercise responsibility toward their needy brethren, both in their behavior and in their solidarity with the human family. This petition also applies to another hunger from which people are perishing, thirst for the word of the Lord and for Catholics receiving his body in the Eucharist, which is our daily bread. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Heard a saying a while ago, I'm trying to remember who it was. Can't have a testimony unless you've been tested. Dr. Alan Hunt knows all about that. Currently serving alongside the amazing Matthew Kelly as the Vice President of Strategy and Content at the Dynamic Catholic Institute. You've seen Dr. Alan and his testimony on the journey home with our friend Marcus Grodi. And, of course, you've probably heard him speak, no doubt, because he is traveling the speaker circuit. And his book, based on his conversion, includes, well, this is the one on his conversion, Confessions of a Megachurch Pastor, How I Discovered the Hidden Treasures of the Catholic Church. But your latest book, Alan, is Everybody Needs to Forgive Somebody, right?
That is correct.
And that just came out?
It came out a couple months ago, that's right.
All right, well, speaking of forgiveness, how were you on the sacrament of confession? When you first started to say, okay, I need to seriously think about becoming a Catholic, what was your thought about the sacraments, the seven sacraments? Did you have a chance to kind of like go over them one by one or do some research? What was your approach?
The funny thing about confession for me, Teresa, was that was really easy. I continue to be amazed, even to this day, at Protestants I meet that are so hung up on confession, because I had found in my experience as a pastor, and also because I was kind of going for spiritual direction on the side with the priest at the monastery, how the enormous power of the sacrament of reconciliation. and just of confessing, and even if you're a Protestant and you don't see it as a sacrament, the power, I mean, and it says in the book of James, if you're a Protestant, that you should confess your sins to your brothers and sisters. And to sit in my office as a pastor and have people come, and it wasn't, again, it wasn't a sacrament, but to see the power as they began to get some things out in the open that were secrets, and then to be able to share some of my own hurts and disappointments and failings with a priest, I knew that power, and so I was looking forward to the sacrament of reconciliation. That was an easy one for me because I knew just how incredibly life-giving and liberating it is. And then, frankly, that's part of the reason I wrote the book, Everybody Needs to Forgive Somebody, because I'm really bad at forgiveness. And so I really kind of wrote that book for myself because I collected stories over the years of true stories of real-life people who experienced the liberating power of grace through forgiveness and finally put those into a book because other people found them helpful. Because I needed them for my own soul, because I'm just not naturally good at forgiveness.
Well, I don't think any of us is. I mean, we're not Mother Teresa, you know, or Teresa of Avila. I mean, that's, I think most of us, if we're honest, it's tough to forgive, especially when you're hurt or if someone else is hurt that you love, you know, to see that going on. Here's the thing that frustrates me, and I've seen this over and over and over again. When Catholics fall away from the faith, they automatically accept whatever someone in the Protestant Church. And many times it's not a fallen away Catholic, sometimes it could be, who's turning around and telling them this, but they automatically take what that person says about the Catholic Church to be, no pun intended, gospel.
Yeah.
And that was not, in terms of, I fell away from the faith for a variety of reasons, as you know my story, so did my husband, we both did. But it was never, for me, it was always like, well, wait a minute, I thought about this. First of all, the Eucharist, I could never leave the Eucharist, but 2,000 years the Church has been around.
Right.
So I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at John Paul II, I'm looking at all the saints, and I'm thinking there's got to be something to this Catholicism. For some reason, I just didn't get it. So you start studying your own faith, and I knew what some of these people were saying about the Church wasn't true. At that particular time, let's say 20 years ago when I was first coming back, I couldn't answer them necessarily from Scripture, although now I realize how easy that is, too, if you just know your Bible. But I'm thinking, this is not true what they're saying. We don't worship Mary. You know, we don't re-sacrifice Jesus on the cross every week. So it wasn't like I accepted what the other people said. I'm like, wait a minute, you're not even Catholic. How do you know this? According to whom? There seems to be, in many of the people that I've met who've left the faith, they automatically accept what that other person is saying about the Church, as opposed to saying, well, gee, maybe I want to talk to Father so-and-so or Bishop so-and-so before I make it. Why is that?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I think part of it is that we as Americans, and maybe it's a human thing, maybe it's not just an American thing, we want to, once we make a decision, we like to go find ways to rationalize that we made the right decision. And when we find somebody that's saying something that confirms or verifies what we want to believe, then we accept that. And there's an enormous amount of misinformation. My wife grew up Southern Baptist, and so she grew up with a much stronger anti-Catholic bent than I. Having grown up Methodist, I didn't really know much about Catholicism, good or bad. But she had a pretty strong anti-Catholic bent. And as we got to become friends with my friend, again, Father Stephen, the Dominican, over the course of several years, she goes, you know, I'm starting to realize that just about everything I've been taught about Catholicism was wrong. She said, I don't understand how some of this, how these myths and misinformation is out there. And it's true. I think back on even on my own experience, how little I knew, and most of what I did know was not accurate. And most of us don't want to invest that much energy and time in really trying to understand what it is that we believe. We'd like it simple because we've got enough other stuff going on in our lives. I'm going, yeah, I don't want to research it. I'll just accept it.
Mm, yeah. So what can we do to help people really start revisiting the sources in the Catholic Church? I mean, what do we do to people starting to leave, thinking about leaving, falling away? I mean, what are the steps? I mean, you've seen this before because you saw so many former Catholics.
Well, I mean, I think, and obviously, you know that this is what Matthew and I have devoted our lives to, a dynamic Catholic. And I think there's kind of multiple questions in there. And the first one is, how do we help prevent the mass
right.
exodus out the back door among younger people? And that's why he and I have been very hard at work on a world-class confirmation experience, because that's really our last good chance to make sure that we give kids, that we endow them with the gift of the beauty of the faith, because 85% of kids who go through confirmation within 7 years have left the church. So let's at least make sure that they know what they're leaving, that they actually know the faith, and if they choose to reject the faith, so be it. At least we know we've given it to them, because in our research, we found that generally we're not doing a very good job, and that's actually being kind. We're doing a really, really poor job of helping kids to get the faith and confirmation. So we're working on that, and we're going to be rolling that out in January. And then with adults, as you and I have talked about before, that's why I'm so interested in your book, God's Bucket List, and some of the other things that you're writing, is that we use books because that's an easy way to help people share their faith and also to help evangelize. I mean, a third of people who come to Mass at Christmas and a third of people who come to Mass at Easter, that's the only time all year that they're at Mass. And so what they're teaching us is that they have some kind of Catholic memory or some kind of a Catholic identity, but they're not quite sure what to do with that. And so through our what we call our parish book program at Dynamic Catholic, we make lots of books available at very, very, very low cost to parishes so that they can give books as a gift to people who come at Christmas or Easter or any other point at that, for that matter. But when so many people are there who are somewhat Catholic but hadn't quite figured out how to really take the step in, give them a strategic book like Matthew's book, Rediscover Catholicism, or like my book, Confessions of a Megachurch Pastor, and we make several others available as well, because we've proven that you give them a gift, they're glad to receive something from the church. And then secondly, these are books that will reawaken and rekindle their faith. And so that's kind of what we're doing with adult confirmation, and then we'll also put out stuff in the next several years with First Communion and baptism and marriage prep to help really make those moments what they should be. But it's not a simple process.
No, it's not. And it's a day-by-day thing, too. Boy, this hour is going by so quickly, and I have so many more questions. Dr. Alan Hunt is with us for the entire hour. We're talking about not only his conversion to Catholicism, but what we can do as Catholics to keep Catholics in the pews and get many of them back in the pews so they can discover the one true, holy, and apostolic faith. The Catholic Church is so amazing. I'm so grateful for it. And it wasn't for many years. I am now. We'll be right back.
Franciscan University of Steubenville is known for its academics and Catholicism, and for good reason. With more than 40 majors and a curriculum that integrates faith and reason, Franciscan University delivers top-notch academics. Campus life centers around Mass, and students can't wait for their semester in Austria to immerse themselves in the history of their Catholic faith. Discover a university that is academically excellent and passionately Catholic. Discover Franciscan University of Steubenville. Find out more at franciscan.edu.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
Our individual and corporate relationships with the Lord, our relationship to the church, the precepts of the church, our relationships with the world and the culture that surrounds us. Father Ricardo discusses these things and more, all from the Catholic perspective on Christ is the answer. Listen to Christ is the Answer, Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday evenings at 6, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
You remember the day you first laid eyes on her. They handed you the keys and you drove back home for everyone to admire. And although the memories have been made, it's time to pass the torch to someone else. Consider donating your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Even if it's not running, we'll take care of everything from pickup to your tax receipt. Just call 866-628-CARS to show you just how easy it is to donate. That's 866-628-CARS. And mention Ave Maria Radio.
Continuing our conversation with Dr. Alan Hunt about his journey into Catholicism, how do you walk away from a major church as a pastor, a megachurch, and leave it all behind? Well, you know, when you find the truth, that's it. You're cooked. You're done. Right, Alan? I mean, once you meet, you really find out the church. I mean, it's as St. Peter said, oh, Lord, where do we go? Only you have the words of eternal life.
That's exactly right. And the thing was, it took me, I guess my journey was, I don't know, close to almost 20 years. It was 17 or 18 years. And it wasn't until the last two or three where it all kind of began to click and come together. And I went, okay, I see. And it was, so everything sort of started to lock down. And eventually I went, okay, I've got an ethical problem. I'm Catholic. And I can't really, I can't be a Methodist pastor if I'm Catholic.
Yeah. It doesn't kind of work that way.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of an issue.
Yeah.
All right, so how did you meet Matthew?
Before I answer that, actually, what you said before the break, I wanted to mention one more thing about what do
sure.
we do. You know, I was talking about dynamiccatholic.com, but in particular for each of us as Catholics, one of the ways that I end almost all my talks is I really think that we need to begin to think differently. And what I encourage people to do is oftentimes is take out a piece of paper at my talks, and at the end I say, I want you to write down one name. I want you to write down three. I don't want you to write down ten. I want you to write down one name of someone in your life who's a fallen away, lapsed Catholic, or perhaps somebody who's not Catholic who needs to be. And I want you to write that one name down, and I want you to begin to pray for that person each day. I don't want you to pray for a bunch of people. I don't want you to pray some big general prayer for everybody. I want you to pray specifically for Tommy Johnson, or whatever that person's name is, and I want you to pray that God will change you, not him, but change you in how you receive him and how you interact with him, and that God will use you in his own way as an instrument to help that person make their way back into the faith. And I really think that's where it begins. I mean, as much as what you do and what we do at Dynamic Catholic is important and helps people, at the end of the day, if each of us is intentional about really praying for someone and making ourselves available to God as his instruments, that's going to be what will ultimately carry the day.
Right. We have to take everything to God in prayer, and we have to put that first, I think, really pray. And I also think we have to realize, and this is something I found, that it's not necessarily going to be you that brings Tommy
right.
Johnson or your best friend or your spouse or your daughter back to the faith.
Yeah, and again, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. But also, I think very, very few of us have been very strategic and intentional in our minds about identifying one person and really heartfelt prayer for that person each day, not just sort of a throwaway thing here and there, but really identify one person. I mean, if, what is there, 80 million Catholics, something like that in America, and let's say 20 million of us are active, if 20 million of us are praying for one person each day, that's a game changer. Because then God begins to use me, and I begin to think about it, because I get reshaped by God as I do that. I begin to interact with that person differently. It's not my agenda where I'm trying to make that person Catholic. It's that, okay, God used me to help this person become who you want them to be. And then we become vessels rather than hammers,
right,
if you will.
Okay, so now tell us, how'd you meet Matthew? Inquiring minds want to know.
I forgot the original question.
That's okay.
I had come into the church, I guess it might have been about a year, maybe a little less, and I got an email out of the blue from a guy named Pat Lincioni. So Pat's Italian like you. Boy, is he Italian. and all you have to do is watch him talk for about 5 minutes with his hands and everything. He's a business writer. And he sent me an email, and I'd never met Pat. I'd read his works, but I'd never met him. And he's in San Francisco. He sends me an email. I'm in Atlanta, and it says, "Hey, Alan, let me introduce myself. I'm going to be speaking at this event. It's a leadership called Lead Like Jesus event, and it's going to be hosted in a church in Atlanta, which I think is the church that you used to be the pastor of. And it's going to be simulcast around the country, but it's going to be at that church. And I heard about you converting into Catholicism. I'm Catholic. And while I'm there, I'd like to meet you if I could." So I said, "Yeah, okay, so we'll hook up." So I went and met him for breakfast or lunch or something while he was here speaking. He goes, "There's like eight speakers for this thing, and six of them are Protestants, and there's me and another Catholic. Have you ever heard of Matthew Kelly?" And I said, "No, I've never heard of Matthew." And he said, "Well, why don't you come over to the event at your former church," which is a little awkward, "and I'll introduce you to Matthew." So went over there, and he and Matthew and I had, I don't know, 10, 15-minute conversation. And Matthew and I quickly recognized we both had the same heart for evangelization and really helping folks who've fallen away find their way back and helping people get deeply connected to the faith. And from that point forward, we started to do some speaking together. And just developed a really close friendship.
Yeah, you know, what he's doing and what you're doing there is so important, especially the name Dynamic Catholic. You don't usually put those two words together. At least that has not been my history in my life as a Catholic, let me tell you. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I have an atheist in my life who really doesn't like me and really doesn't like Catholicism, and every once in a while has read my books and listened to some of the other stuff that I've done and sends me an email out of the blue and always says, "How things at Static Catholic?" just to kind of jibe me. But you're right. Oftentimes the world thinks of us as old-fashioned, antiquated dinosaur. But really, if you have a living, breathing relationship with Jesus Christ, we're the most alive people in the world.
Yeah, another thing that drives me crazy, and I keep trying to really do my best on the air every day to put this out for people, is what we realize, we don't realize what we have in the church. For example, I'm preparing, as you know, for this talk that I'm giving, and pray for me, at the Vatican in a little bit. And going back to some of the documents, the Pontifical Council for the Family has asked me to present on media and the family and how the family are portrayed in the media, which, of course, is right up my alley. And so I'm going back to some of our wonderful documents, World Communications Day statements. My favorite from JP2 is 2004, John Paul II's World Communications Day statement that talked about the media and the family, a rich and a riskness. And then I'm looking at risk and a richness. And then I'm looking at the other document that he did, the Apostolic Letter, the Rapid Development. And I'm reading this and I'm saying, there's so much wisdom. I mean, if you did not know that a pope or a bishop wrote some of these letters and these documents, it's really great, sound advice. And this is what I try to get people to understand about the Catholic faith. And Archbishop Chaput was so good and so eloquent when he explains this, that the Catholic Church always has the dignity of the human person in mind. So whatever area of the world or whatever area of faith you're coming from, whatever the Catholic Church is teaching is going to work for the human person, because that's the bottom line, because of the incarnation. And I keep seeing that, Alan, over and over and over again in our documents and our writings.
That's why it ultimately became impossible for me not to be Catholic, Teresa, for that very reason. You begin to read this and you look at the wisdom that has grown over 2,000 years, and you see how spot on it is, and you realize this is the best way to live. This is what God intended. Why would I settle for something that's second rate or half-hearted? This all makes sense. And anytime that I have questions about the church, I quickly came to realize, okay, every other time that I've questioned the church or tested the church has proven itself to be true. So mm-hmm. I'm going to accept this and live into it and read more about it and study up on it. And eventually I go, you know what? Church has figured this one out too. Shame on me.
It goes back to St. Paul, the natural law, it's written on our hearts. It's like, okay, if the church is so, you know, old-fashioned and so wrong, why is it that all the things that she teaches in terms of, especially if you look at the life issues and those below-the-belt issues, which everybody's talking about now, why is it that what the church says brings happiness and fulfillment, and
right.
what the world says brings misery?
And chaos, yep.
And chaos.
It brings misery on the individual level and chaos on the social and cultural level.
Yeah.
And why is it, if the church is so antiquated and so change-resistant and so anti-intellectual, why is it that we gave birth to universities? Why is it that we gave birth to the scientific method? Why is it that we birthed everything that's known as science? The church has done more to make progress in the world than all the other institutions combined. It's not government. It's the church.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, one more segment. Oh, boy, I can't believe this hour is up. We'll have to have you back on. Dr. Alan Hunt sharing his story into Catholicism, of course. A convert walked away from a major megachurch and is now actively working with the wonderful Matthew Kelly, who is a dynamic Catholic himself. So is Dr. Hunt. That's the website, by the way, if you'd like more information, dynamiccatholic.com, talking about the conversion of Dr. Alan Hunt and how we all need a daily conversion. This isn't something that just ends just because we've, you know, had made our applications this week to go to Mass and hopefully more than once. But this is something that we need to do every day. Get up every morning and say, "Here I am, Lord. I've come to do your will." How do we do that better so that people look at us and say, "Hey, what does he or she have that I don't have? I want that." It's known as Catholicism, and a relationship, most importantly, with Jesus in the Catholic Church. We'll be right back.
As healthcare open enrollment begins, we invite you to explore the CMF Curo Catholic Healthcare Ministry. CMF Curo is half the cost of many traditional healthcare options and is consistent with church teaching. Members share medical costs and are exempt from the Affordable Care Act. To learn more about CMF Curo, go to cmfcuro.com. Experience your faith in your healthcare today. Visit cmfcuro.com. Christian caring, Christian sharing.
Weingarts, everything from lawn to snow.
Hi, it's Dan Weingarts. Stay ahead of winter storms with one of our in-stock Toro snowblowers. Toro snowblowers are strong and reliable and clear down to the pavement. And with prices starting at just $359, we have a Toro to fit every budget. For more information, visit Weingarts.com or our stores in Utica, Farmington Hills, Cedar Springs, Clarkston, and Ann Arbor.
Weingarts, everything.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta, and on Cresta in the Afternoon, we weekly interview guests who are expert in church doctrine, religious liberty, protecting the unborn, Vatican diplomacy, edifying movies, and much, much more. And we want to make those interviews easier to share with your family and friends. So we're looking for volunteers to transcribe these interviews into text form. They're going to be circulated nationally. And if you're interested in helping, email Nick at ntom, T-H-O-M-M, at WDEO.net.
Catholic Connection is underwritten in part by Charity Mobile. Communication is critical. And in today's world, your cellular service is your lifeline to family and friends. Ave Maria Radio and Charity Mobile are partners in communicating the most important message of all, the good news of Jesus Christ. Charity Mobile is a provider of cellular LTE phones and service and has been a proud supporter of Ave Maria Radio and other pro-life causes for more than 10 years. More information at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Charity begins at phone.
Hi, this is Rose, Teresa Tamayo's mother. I can't believe the hour is up. Almost. We have 5 minutes left and so much to... Gosh, so many questions I have for Alan. Always good to have him on the program. And really, it's something we can all learn from. That's why I love to have people share their stories, because there's always something with which we can identify in terms of a person's journey into the faith. Dr. Alan Hunt serves, as I mentioned, alongside Matthew Kelly, as the Vice President of Strategy and Content at the Dynamic Catholic Institute, dynamiccatholic.com. So what are the big projects you're working on with Matthew right now, Alan?
Well, we have... The three big ones, two of which I mentioned before, our parish book program, where we help parishes give away books, and secondly, our Catholic Moments series, which is starting with confirmation and will roll out to 8 or 9 additional moments as well, where we're trying to make those moments really the powerful ones they should be. And then lastly, folks who follow Matthew know that he's been doing Passion and Purpose live events around the country about 25 times a year, and I'm going to be launching starting in 2 weeks in Pittsburgh, Kansas, as a matter of fact. Passion and Purpose for Marriage events. So I'll be doing 15 or 20 of those this year to go and spend a half day on Saturday in different cities and help people, particularly married couples, grow their relationship to the next level.
That's so important. I mean, there's so many areas, but I think the marriage thing, you look at the television with all the reality shows, and they're all talking about saying yes to the dress and 4 weddings, but are they really understanding the covenant in which they're entering?
Yeah, and the culture we're in is so toxic toward marriage to where, I mean, as you know, it's discardable, it's disposable, it's all about me, and if you don't make me happy anymore, this relationship's not working for me, we'll just punt and start over. And we're making it harder and harder for our kids to have long-term stable relationships, so that's one of the things I'm just deeply passionate about.
Well, before we let you go, let's have just a few maybe suggestions on what people can do. Let's say there's someone out there, maybe an RCIA director, a DRE, maybe a pastor, an associate pastor, who's feeling a little bit down, a little frustrated, doesn't feel that he as a priest is connecting, or he as a deacon, or she as a DRE, connecting with those in the pews, and they really want some encouragement. Any suggestions for them?
In terms of how they get encouragement?
Yes. Well, not only how they get encouragement, but what can they do? What activities can they do in their parish? Or I know there's not, you know, a secret pill or something, but well, obviously we have the Eucharist, and the Eucharist is the source and summit of the faith, but people have to understand what the Eucharist is. So what do you suggest?
Well, you're going to think that I'm shamelessly pandering to you, but I mean this sincerely, is that one of the simple things that any priest could do, and frankly any layperson can do, is to get a good, not complicated Catholic book. Get something like God's Bucket List that you're putting out, or any of the number of resources that we have at dynamiccatholic.com that are designed for regular folks in the pew, and lead a simple 3 to 5 week study of that book with 10 or 12 people, whether it's in your house, whether it's in your neighborhood, whether it's at your workplace, whether it's in a restaurant nearby, or whether it's in your parish. just get 10 or 12 people together, pray together, encourage each other, and use a simple, helpful, inspiring Catholic book to talk to each other about the faith. You'll be amazed at what will happen. It's a simple step, but you'll be amazed at the power of it.
Mm, yeah. Well, if you think about what happened with the purpose-driven life years ago, that's an example of it, I think, right?
Well, man, it spread like wildfire because, again, it wasn't complicated. It wasn't something that you needed to go to Harvard to understand. It was simple, helpful, and inspiring, and that's where most of us live. We need a little encouragement. We need a little bit of help, and then faith comes quickly behind that. And if you put 8, 10, 12 people together for the right purpose and you facilitate that, wonderful things occur. It really is. It's a marvelous moment of grace.
Okay, any other ideas?
Oh, if I were on staff or if I were a priest and I was discouraged, I'm a big believer in good Catholic music and good Christian music, and I would buy some excellent CDs by Matt Maher or some of my favorite Catholic artists to inspire me to rejuvenate, take a day away. I mean, most of the priests I know and most staff people I know work 60, 80 hours.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And oftentimes, in trying to give away, they're not replenishing the supply. And so a retreat day was a game changer for me, having one day a month where I know I'm going to be away and just spend it in the time of the presence of God and let him do what he wants to do and not try to orchestrate it or have too much to say, but just go and listen.
And also get a sunburn. Go to adoration.
Yeah, yeah. I did that this morning. I do the 5 o'clock hour at our parish on Tuesday mornings, and it was wonderful. That's the best hour of my week.
Well, thank you for all your time. Really appreciate it coming back on and spending a full hour with us. Let me again remind folks that we've been chatting with convert to Catholicism, Dr. Alan Hunt. You can find out all about him, of course, at dynamiccatholic.com. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next on Catholic Connection on the next show. See ya.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio. Our producer is Andrew Krucek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection as Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
On Putting on the Mind of Christ this week, Sister Ann Shields helps to prepare us for a fruitful Advent season.
John the Baptist told us very clearly, prepare the way of the Lord, make straight his paths. John the Baptist was the forerunner of the Messiah, the one who went ahead of him to prepare the way. In a season of Advent, each of us needs to take the posture of how can I in my life prepare the way of the Lord.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting on the Mind of Christ. Sister Ann Shields helps us prepare the way for the Lord as we continue to prepare ourselves for His Nativity during the remainder of this Advent season. Listen to Putting on the Mind of Christ this and every Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
This Ave Maria Radio program is underwritten in part by Visiting Angels. Many people are wondering how they can care for older family members who cannot fully care for themselves. Visiting Angels provides compassionate home visits even up to 24 hours per day, and you may select your caregiver. Visiting Angels assist adults nationwide to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide